As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on The Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Athletic Baseball Show for Friday, August 5th. Derek Van Riper here with Steven Nesbitt in for Keith Law. Keith getting a much-deserved vacation after the draft and trade deadline were stacked on top of each other. Steven, thanks for stepping in.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I know we just wrote a good story, Zach Buchanan, about how difficult this draft reschedule into the month of July has made things for everyone in baseball ops, but Keith Law, Zach Buchanan, Maria Torres on our staff, it's made their lives a lot more hectic too. So shout out to them, Keith. Glad you get a day off today. Happy to step in.
Yeah, I hope everybody's finding a beach or something relaxing if they work on the baseball ops or prospect side of this business. So on today's episode, we're going to grade all 30 teams' moves from the trade deadline window, giving, you know, A to F letter grades for each team. We're going to start at the top. We're going to give out the A's first. I had three teams that I felt were truly deserving of an A. There's probably a case for eight or nine different teams to get an A, depending on how you like to give out grades. I guess I'm a little stingy with the A's, which would make me a very unpopular teacher if I had gone down that path, Stephen. But I had the Nats, the Reds, and of course the Padres all getting A's, which it's hard to have two teams that hooked up on a huge deal both coming away with top grades, but I kind of felt like as much as you can get fair value for a player like Juan Soto, the Nationals actually did it.
Does it make you feel a little icky that two of your three teams are sellers? You're like, yeah. I'm giving out A's to the teams who are not actually actively trying in 2022.
I hate that because it's just one of those gross things about baseball that I want to see fixed, but I also know that the best way to fix it is to probably get players to free agency quicker. And I know that the owners are not going to concede on that, at least in a big way. Maybe, you know, an extra year of arbitration or something like that. But that's still not going to move the needle as far as getting 20 teams every year, 25 teams every year to play for the current season. I think the league would be better if it did that. But I think the important thing to keep in mind is if you are not going to win this year, and you're probably not going to win next year, you do need to commit to that longer term future. And I think both the Nationals and the Reds appropriately recognize that with the core talent they had in place. And they've done really a good job making sure that their future actually has a chance of being a competitive one. Whereas if they had just stayed and tried to ride it out, tried to grind their way into the playoffs, this is more Reds than Nationals, I guess, in this case. What was the best case scenario for the 2022 Reds if they hadn't made all the moves going back to even the pre-lockout times, like make the playoffs and get burned by the Dodgers or the Padres or the Mets or the Braves? Like, that was probably as good as it was going to get. So I guess they accepted that reality a lot faster than I did.
Yeah, I think we're all, as baseball fans, kind of predisposed to not liking it when teams stand pat, whether they're buyers or sellers at the deadline. You're going to see in our grades, I'm sure, that reflected where there are teams who had an opportunity to go all in buying, go all in selling, and didn't do it. And I think it's a missed opportunity in a big way when you see some of the returns for some of these guys. But there were opportunities elsewhere for teams, even not at this deadline, maybe before. Let's grab a guy like Brian Reynolds. The Pirates have still not traded him. You could agree with that. You could disagree with that. But as time goes on, the less opportunity there is to get max value for a guy like that. Whit Merrifield could have been traded 2 years ago for significantly more than he was this time around to the Blue Jays. But yeah, as far as what your A group looks like, I would toss one more team in there. I would say the Mariners go in there for me. And you could argue for several teams that are down in the probably B range for us. The Yankees, I felt a lot better about what they did before they traded Jordan Montgomery for Harrison Bader. You can make an argument for them. The Twins, the Astros did some good stuff. But the A group, I wanted to add the Mariners on my side because I thought they were, while they didn't go get that big bat, I never considered them true players for Juan Soto. I thought they did what it took to make them significantly better this year, getting Luis Castillo, and also significantly better for next year. It felt like they kind of punched their tickets to the playoffs, even though nothing is actually done at this point. They saw an opportunity to make themselves a true playoff team and be really a force in the playoffs if things turn right in their lineup. They have the rotation right now to do it, and they bought themselves, I think, a little more room for error on the margins with some of these young pitchers. So I loved what the Mariners did. They get an A minus maybe from me.
Yeah, so I went to the University of Wisconsin. Instead of doing minuses and pluses, they just combined the grades for the space between. So if you were between an A and a B, it was an A/B.
Oh.
I thought that was kind of an interesting way to go. So you get like a 3.5 instead of a 4 or a 3. That's a good way to grade it, too. So at least an A, B team.
There are a couple, I think, couple teams we'll have here that were right on the cusp where whether it's A to B or B to C or, you know, D to F, we had some teams on the margins.
Yeah, unfortunately, a few teams did check in with those really low grades. Think about the Mariners. Their offense has been better than expected because Julio Rodriguez has been amazing. I think the timing of his injury may have kept them from realizing the need to add one more bat. But even if we just say he's going to come back healthy in a couple of weeks and they're going to be on track to be a playoff team, they do have a playoff caliber offense by WRC+. They are currently entering play on Thursday, tied for 9th in team WRC+ at 106. Every team ahead of them, the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Blue Jays, the Astros, the Mets, the Twins, the Cardinals, and the Braves, those are all playoff teams. So that's just, you know, you want to be in that group. Even if you're not elite of the elite offensively, they're at least in the conversation. And I do think the playoff rotation, now that you put Luis Castillo in there, that plays up with the other top contenders around the league as well.
Yeah, I'm thinking about what the Red Sox did last year. Of course, they have not been who we thought they were going to be this year, but they got themselves into the conversation in the playoffs and had a lineup that could push them through the first round, you know, into some territory. They took the Astros a lot farther than, you know, any of us really expected they would. They were a dangerous team, haven't had it this year, but there are teams, I think, and the Mariners are one of them, that put themselves in position now this year to be someone like that, to be able to make some noise in the playoffs. Because you don't make noise in the playoffs if you're not in them. And they needed to make an upgrade in the rotation with all those young arms. You don't know who's going to need to take a breather, who needs going to have a minimizing of innings down the stretch. Of course, injuries can play a part. So Castillo's one of the horses left in the game who will give you 7+ innings every time out, and I think it was a great ad for them, and it did take them almost immediately out of the Soto sweepstakes. But I didn't think they were going to be the team that was going to give up everything to do it. They gave up two top Keith Law just had them top Marte. Nuevi Marte was a top 12, I think he was, on Keith's latest midseason ranking, and then Arroyo was an honorable mention, top 60. So that's two big names that would have been the centerpiece of a Soto trade, and they decided to do it for a pitcher who is controllable as well.
And I think the Reds, I mean, it wasn't just trading Luis Castillo. They traded Tyler Malley to the Twins. They traded Brandon Drury to the Padres. They flipped Tyler Naquin to the Mets. They traded Tommy Pham to the Red Sox. You start looking at players they've drafted recently, players they've signed at international free agency. They are loaded with infield prospects. Eli De La Cruz, a guy they already had, joined by Edwin Arroyo and Nuevi Marte, gives them three potential impact players that might only be 2 years away from contributing at the big league level. So you can kind of look at 2024 and start to get excited about the Reds again. 2023 might be kind of gross, but yeah, at least now that you see something off in the distance that gives you that glimmer of hope, you're excited. It's not just those three guys. I mean, Matt McClain, who they drafted. They got Christian Encarnacion Strand back as part of the Mally trade. Cam Collier, one of the best, I guess, bargains, you'd say, in the first round of the draft, just based on some of the projections of where they expected him to go and him being available at 18th overall. I love how things are coming into place for this team.
Yeah, I think you hear people across the game say you can never have enough players up the middle, catchers, shortstop, center field. They're going to test that a little bit here. They have so much talent up the middle, especially in the infield, but it's something you figure out if someone shifts to second, to third base, to right field. All that is way more doable than the other way around. And so, yeah, that's one of those selling teams that you feel pretty good giving them an A, because look, you committed to what you were doing to the detriment of your fans, your franchise, telling them, you know, who else are you going to go root for? You made it very clear what they were doing this offseason. They had only a couple of valuable pieces left, and they managed to turn them into prospects that I think pretty much across the prospect guru list, they were well regarded. So the Reds took a big step forward, it seems, and it'll be a little while till they're a winning ball club. But you like the young talent they already have on the roster, the Tyler Stevensons, the Jonathan Indias. So it'll be a little while, but had to like the moves they made.
Let's talk about the Padres for a moment. The Ooh. Opportunity to land a player like Juan Soto comes around, you know, like once a century in a trade. So if you get that opportunity and you have the players on your roster that will actually entice a team to make that trade with you, you do it 10 times out of 10. Nothing but respect for AJ Preller taking this all-in sort of approach. And I love that he also got Josh Bell in the deal, because Josh Bell is more than just a throw-in player. Josh Bell is a good offensive player who ends up being an upgrade over Luke Voit at first base. And then they go out and get Brandon Drury in a separate trade. And then the Josh Hader trade, which became old news about as fast as trading for an elite reliever can become old news, makes them better in the bullpen. So I don't really see any flaws in this roster. I think they can go toe-to-toe with the Dodgers in October, even if they can't make up the ground in the NL West. They do play 12 more times before the end of the regular season, so they'll have a chance to close down that gap. I think they're actually built for October now, and previously they were a little bit closer to one of those teams that could get there and then would struggle on the biggest stage because they didn't quite have that star power to put them over the top, especially with Tatis hurt. If Tatis comes back healthy, this is just absurd. I just wonder if maybe we're almost taking the return of a healthy Tatis for granted at this point.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, that can't be taken for granted until he proves that he can stay on the field consistently. He could run into a wall his first game back, and we're back in the same situation. I think sort of what AJ Preller did here was provide a little bit of insurance in case that does happen, where a realistic way for this whole trade deadline to turn out, even getting Juan Soto, was you just get Juan Soto, and that's your move. We spent so much in prospect capital that we and had to find a way to dump some salary along the way, that we just couldn't reasonably expect to do any more than that. Well, then what happens if Tatis doesn't come back? Or even so, your big three is still Tatis, Machado, and Soto. That's great, but look what's around them. Look, you know, you've had a good story in Jerks and Profar this year. Eric Hosmer had fallen off in a big way in the last couple of months. Jake Cronenworth is a good second baseman, all-star caliber, but nothing truly that special. That's not a team I'm betting on in the postseason. But I have to just wonder, and hopefully Dennis Lynn will get the story eventually, how did Josh Bell get thrown into that conversation? At what point did he enter the chat, as it were? Because the conversation starts with Juan Soto. What's it going to take to get Juan Soto? And at what point does AJ Preller say, listen, I'll give you the whole package. I'll give you everybody you're asking for, but you're going to have to throw in Josh Bell. And if you do that at the start of the conversation, you might get a no, because look, we'll just package Bell over here and we'll get some, you know, a couple of prospects for him to the Mets or whatever it is. But if you get to a point where both sides are invested. They want to get this Soto deal done because Washington clearly felt that this was the move they needed to make now, not something they should hang on to him for a couple of months. And then you say, okay, listen, we're close. We are seeing basically eye to eye. If you throw Josh Bell in there, we'll give you the extra prospect, whatever you're looking for. And we've got ourselves a deal as long as we figure out which Major League first baseman we're sending your way. Sorry, Luke Voit, loser in all of this. So I think it was a savvy move to do that. And again, while we're at it, why don't we address the closer situation, which they just 2 days earlier gone to a closer by committee with Rogers really struggling of late. And you get Josh Hader, an absolute weapon out of the bullpen. And then you pick up Brandon Drury, who goes ahead and hits a grand slam in his first game. So they didn't just address their biggest need. They addressed basically all of them. And you can, you know, quibble about the bottom three in their order, but that's a pretty good problem to be having at this point with Fernando Tatis coming back shortly.
Yeah, and even if Tatis is 80% of the player he's been previously when on the field, that's still probably good enough given all the moves that Preller made at this deadline. As far as the Nationals, their long-term outlook, this is a team that has really struggled to develop pitching. They've been willing to spend on it in free agency. They've been willing to trade prospects when their window was open. I think they had the good fortune of 1-1 picks when they were no-brainer 1-1 picks back when they got Bryce Harper and Steven Strasburg, but someone in the organization deserves credit for finding and signing Juan Soto in international free agency. That's a skill that you recognize the superstar and brought him into the organization. So they do some things right. They're going to go through an ownership change probably between now and the next time they're good. That seems like it's on the table for some time in the next few months. I look at this organization now, and obviously the return from the trade, having Robert Hassel and James Wood, plus Harleen Susana, who seems like the important extra prospect they got in order to send Josh Bell back to San Diego, just reading some of the stories about it.
Yep.
That gives them another arm in their system who could shoot up prospect rankings as he advances. If the stuff is as good 2 years from now as it is right now and the command comes together and he holds up as a starter, he could be an impact guy. Brady House, who they recently drafted, Elijah Green, their first rounder this year. You can start to see this not quite on the same level as Cincinnati in terms of depth, but they do have the upper end impact prospects that you're looking for. And I think given the struggle to develop pitching, I'm glad for their sake that they push so hard toward position players for the most part. And then of course got Mackenzie Gore as a big league ready starter. Even if he's not the star people expect him to be back when he was drafted, he did a lot prior to getting hurt this year that convinced us that he's at least a good mid rotation big league starter.
Yeah, absolutely. Gore is someone who felt like he was a little written off before this season and finally got his opportunity and was electric at times. Definitely exciting and showed a pretty bright future. And I mean, what does this deal look like if Gore hadn't taken that step forward again, right? Is that someone who's actually coveted by the Nationals? But he showed what he had. They wanted him. And this deal absolutely, in my mind, accelerates where the Nationals are, not only from a prospect standpoint, but from a franchise standpoint, right? But I don't think you're hearing quite as much noise about trading the franchise cornerstone here as you would have basically any other franchise at this point, because of there's in such a bad place coming off this World Series a few years ago that they aren't on the way up. They're still on the way down at this point. You know, they're still on the way to gutting this team. And so if you trade him now, I mean, how much time does this lop off of what your expected return to contention is? Is it 1 year? Is it 2 years? It might be 2 years. I mean, that's a big thing in this day and age with A, making your money back if you're looking at a new ownership group if you handed them the keys 2 weeks ago and said, hey, listen, you got to make a decision here. We just won a World Series 3 years ago. Can we get back there quick with our superstar cornerstone still under contract for the rest of his career? Didn't his brother also sign with the Nationals? Like, this is our story. We got to stick to it. But instead they say, okay, we're going to make this kind of crazy move because he seems like he's not going to be in it beyond the next 2 years. He's not going to sign long term. And this is our opportunity. And they struck. They did. You know, they got, I think, squeezed everything they possibly could out of it. Is it enough? It's Juan Soto. So we can't say if it's enough until the next probably 8 years play out. But in the near term, it looks like it got them a whole lot better real quickly. And we'll just wait for Keith Law's top 10 Nationals ranking to drop so we can compare it this year to next. It'll look a whole lot different, a whole lot better.
I imagine when those organizational rankings come out, you're talking about the Nationals as an easy top 10 system, and I think they were closer to a bottom 5 system prior to making this trade. So as much as you can get value for a superstar like Soto, again, I think the Nationals actually did a good job. That's why they made the A group here.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's move on to the teams that I put B grades on. The Yankees, the Twins, the Astros, the Phillies, and the Braves. I had the Mariners in that group. You bumped them to an A. I'm going to side with you and give them a nudge into the A group. So out of those B teams, do you feel like those are appropriate grades? Do you feel like any of those other teams strongly deserve better or worse than what I gave them?
I don't have strong disagreement. There is one more ad I had, and I'm the son of a school teacher, so I may just be grading on too hard of a curve here. a lot of B's and C's. I would also throw the Orioles in there. And it's not a team that's in really the same situation in a lot of these. It's not a team that's a contender that made themselves considerably better because they didn't. It's a team that stuck to their guns. And it was forsaking sentimentality. It was throwing aside what Trey Mancini, Jorge Lopez mean to this organization. It was saying, look, we are on this terribly long, burdensome rebuild. We finally have a little bit of wind at our backs, a little energy in the fan base, and we are going to kind of say, sorry, everybody, we have a plan in place, and we're going to keep going with it. Lopez can get us 4 pitching prospects from the Twins. Trey Mancini will get us, I think, probably a little bit of an underrated prospect in Seth Johnson. And then they were also, Chase McDermott was another one they added. It was not probably a real popular decision. They could have kept Trey Mancini. They could have tried to be a 500 team this year. They could have tried to beat the Red Sox for fourth place. But I think that for what they're trying to do, I think that's a team that actually did pretty well.
And I think that's the thing you got to keep in mind when you look at every team at the deadline. Sometimes it's better to not just make a move for the sake of making a move. The Orioles took care of the business they should have taken care of. I thought it made all the sense in the world to flip Lopez given that return. It sounds like they're really high on Cade Povich, who they got back from the Twins in that deal. And I think the thing you want to think about if you're an Orioles fan, this is a front office that was built from members of the Astros front office. And if you look at some of the things they've done on the pitching side this year, some of the success stories they've had, the step forward from Tyler Wells, you know, Dean Kramer looking like at least kind of a useful back end starter, Austin Voth just coming over from the Nationals and being more effective, the bullpen success of Dylan Tate, obviously Lopez himself, getting Lopez right was a development win. Keegan Aiken has pitched well to the bullpen. It looks like you're an organization that can fix pitchers a little bit. And you can take guys that are maybe 40 grade players right now and make them useful bullpen arms or get guys to play up a little bit. And that's similar to what the Astros have done for a long time. So compared to a team like Oakland, and Oakland certainly favors quantity over quality, I think, in trades right now, I would just have more confidence if I'm an Orioles fan that the player development people in place are actually going to get as much as they possibly can out of players. And I don't know if I can say that about Oakland right now.
Yeah, good reputation to have that you can take good pitchers and make them great, or even decent, you know, quad A pitchers and make them major leaguers. It looked like that's what they did with Lopez, who had just horrible numbers as a starter. And in 1 year, less than a year, they turn him into a closer that can get you 4 decent to good prospects back. And then you have Bautista right behind him, Felix Bautista, who's ready to be your next closer. You know, they're all set, not in the same way that the Brewers were all set with having Devin Williams ready to take the mantle from from Josh Hader, but it, again, a team that's farther away. They stuck to their guns and probably you could B range for me. I'm going to stick them in the B's, but I understand that they don't really fit in with that group. That group is more a group of contenders that meaningfully added to their team without going for the superstar ad.
Yeah, the Twins, I think that's exactly how I would describe them. They got starting pitching for this year and for next year. Tyler Mahle, nice addition. You get him out of Great American Ballpark, the home run rate probably comes down. He might be a little bit underrated in some circles. He's a lot like Sonny Gray, who they also acquired from the Reds previously. But I think getting high-quality innings from that rotation was important. Fortifying the bullpen, too. That was something that I think the Twins really needed to do. Adding Lopez does that. Adding Michael Fulmer from the Tigers also does that. So I think they're a lot better where they need to be. And I think the best part about this, too, being a smaller market team, being a team that doesn't run a big payroll, I wondered if the Twins would have to trade some of their major league caliber young players, Trevor Larnach, Alex Kirilloff, maybe some of the higher end, Royce Lewis, who's hurt right now, some of those higher end players that are legit, like, ready. And they didn't. They kept all of those guys. So all in all, I think this is a pretty successful deadline for them, just kind of given the overall lean of the organization. They do have a lot of players on the IL right now, so we'll see if they can get healthy and hold on to that AL Central lead. I thought the Yankees were having a great deadline until they made one last move right before everything stopped. They traded away Jordan Montgomery, and they got back Harrison Bader. I don't even mind the trade from like a pure value perspective. Yeah. I just think it put the Yankees in this kind of compromising position. If they lose starters to an injury now, they are in big trouble compared to where they were previously. They traded some of their starting pitching depth away in these trades. I mean, part of the cost of going out to get Frankie Montas was sending back Waldichuk and J.P. Sears. And Sears especially was the kind of up and down guy that they ordinarily would use to bridge the gap from early August to October. And then he could either go to the bullpen or not be on the roster at all. So I just think about like the shoulder injury for Montas that might have lessened the amount that the A's got back in the return. Taillon being a guy that's had major injuries. Domingo Germán having shoulder issues recently. Luis Severino being on the IL right now. He went to the 60-day IL. I think they're walking a little bit of a fine line here. I'd be a lot happier with their deadline if they hadn't made that last deal with the Cardinals.
I think they're way more susceptible for things going wrong in the rotation at this point. And it doesn't feel like a move that wins you a playoff series. You know, I don't think the argument in favor of the move for the Yankees is, well, Jordan Montgomery wasn't going to start you a playoff game probably. Well, he could have helped in the bullpen, or he could have helped through September when someone goes down. Listen, Jameson Taillon hasn't thrown big innings in quite some time. Neither has Luis Severino. And yes, you got Montas. That was a great move. And I felt like the rotation had a little bit of depth after that trade. And it's almost like the extra 2 hours they got from the 6 p.m. Eastern deadline did them in a little bit. It didn't feel like that move had to be made. This is a team where in the offseason, you saw how good their offense was likely going to be, and Aaron Judge has single-handedly made it even better. But they said, okay, let's go get IKF to play shortstop. We're going to go more defensive-minded at catcher. And they have almost taken a couple positions and said, we're not going to worry about being above league average at this position. And a move like Harrison Bader is further going in that direction, right? It's saying, if we put him in center field to start or defensive replacement, whatever it is, we don't mind he's going to be a below average hitter. We think there's value elsewhere. And because of the lineup we have, we can take the fact that we don't have Gary Sanchez behind the plate. We don't have, you know, maybe Gio Urshela is bad at shortstop or however you want to line things up. So I get that that's the strategy, the approach they're kind of going with, is that we have a good enough offense that we want to just shore up our defense in certain areas. But I don't think at that cost it made sense. At that price, we're giving up one of your, you know, solid starting pitchers was probably worth it. For the Cardinals, I think totally worth it. They've been such a shuttle of starting pitchers with injuries and ineffectiveness and what have you that makes sense. You have a glut of outfielders. You had enough that you could have pulled off a Juan Soto trade if you cared to. But yeah, that move didn't make a lot of sense. And I thought it was setting up for a it was the alley-oop to a slam dunk somewhere. I thought it was trading for Pablo Lopez or one of these other starters on the market that they said, oh, we have one too many starters. We're going to go get a defensive center fielder. And then here's Pablo Lopez in the Yankees rotation. And that next move just didn't happen. And we kind of were left shrugging our shoulders at 6 o'clock.
Yeah. So, I mean, still a good deadline, but just could have been a better one, I think, if they had avoided that move. I'm interested to see if they're able to get more out of Harrison Bader's bat than the Cardinals were. Maybe a fresh start and going to a more hitter-friendly environment makes that a possibility once he's healthy for the Yankees. The Astros, I think, had pretty limited needs, but I think they addressed those needs. So they're one of those teams that didn't have to do a lot. They got Trey Mancini. I thought that was a great addition. With Lance McCullers getting close to returning, they also flipped Jake Odorizzi. I thought it was important for Atlanta to get some innings because of Spencer Strider being such an important part of their rotation. Ian Anderson struggles just finding a glue guy. I think Odorizzi fits that perfectly, but Will Smith comes back to Houston. So they have one more good late inning high leverage reliever. So now you look at that bullpen, it's one better. It's Presley, it's Rafael Montero, it's Smith, it's Hector Neris, it's Ryan Stanek. Like, that's a good five pitcher bullpen right there to get you through just about any scenario. Mancini is an upgrade for me over Yuli Gurriel. Yep. I know they made that trade to give up Jose Siri, but they've got pretty good depth in center field and they're getting a lot out of that cast that they've used to replace George Springer ever since letting him go in free agency.
Yeah, so in this exercise of grading teams, I feel like the basic question, the binary answer you're looking for is, did they address their needs? Yes or no? And there are teams that are sellers who don't care if they address their needs, and that's, we can toss them out. So there are teams that did not address their needs at all, and we'll get to them in the lower letters. But among those that did address their needs, there are sort of like three buckets I look at. Either you did it with a superstar, or you're the Padres. You did it with the second, third, fourth best available player at that position. I think that's where the Astros sit. I think that's where the Yankees kind of sit. I think that's where the Twins sit, as you just mentioned. And then there are the teams that are going to be, you addressed it technically, but you didn't bring in anybody that was one of, like, on really like your wish list at any position. And that's where we're going to get to a team, I think, like the Mets is where I land on what they did. Technically, yeah, you filled some, so you didn't do nothing and you addressed some positions of need, but not with impact players. And I think that's where sort of threading this needle that these teams are trying to do. And that's how you get into this range of having a solid deadline, a productive deadline. The Twins, Astros, Phillies, Braves, is that you were able to identify that maybe Josh Bell, for whatever reason, he's getting tossed in with Juan Soto, wasn't going to happen. Trey Mancini is available. Let's go get Trey Mancini. And we don't have to overpay for him, I don't think. And Christian Vasquez, available to make a pretty dire offensive catching situation a bit better. And then the Odorizzi for Will Smith trade almost made too much sense. It was a perfect fit for what those two teams needed. I think that's why you see an easy one-for-one flip there. I like what the Astros did a lot.
And just to Atlanta's credit, too, after trading away Will Smith, they go to the Angels, trade some of their young starting pitching depth. Tucker Davidson, who didn't really have a path to a lot of innings in Atlanta, goes to Anaheim, where they need starting pitching desperately. And they get back Raisel Iglesias, who probably ends up not only making the bullpen better right now, he's probably their closer in 2023 because Kenley Jansen's there on a one-year deal. So I just think Atlanta did a really good job not having pressing needs as well, addressing accordingly. And Robbie Grossman gets added in as a depth outfielder. I know he's had a down year for the Tigers, but I've always liked him as a good fourth outfielder off the bench. He's hit lefties well for his whole career. He switch hits. He's not a particularly great defender, but just a good fit for them as a team that ended up, I think, turning to Guillermo Heredia a lot in those depth outfielder spots last year.
Yeah, and DVR, we should look back and see what kind of grades people were giving out to Alex Anthopoulos last year, because I feel like for all the moves he made and all the credit he's gotten in hindsight, at the time you're adding Jock Peterson, Eddie Rosario, Richard Rodriguez, Adam Duvall, and Jorge Soler. Like, I don't think that was an A for me. I think those three tiers I just mentioned, I think that's more of a, you addressed it technically?
Yes, it'd be more of a C. Like, well, you did something.
You did something. You're trying to be a contender, but I don't think that's going to make a team that's two games under 500 into a playoff team, but shows what we know.
Real quick, the Phillies, I think, were a team that surprised me because I thought they might have just been caught sitting on their hands and just saying, yeah, we're that team. We're just not quite good enough to close the gap on the best teams in the NL. And we're here we are yet again stuck in the middle. But the trade that they made with the Angels has been my favorite trade. They made two trades. And the first one was Brandon Marsh going to Philadelphia straight up for Logan Ohapi, the top catching prospect in the Phillies organization. I like it for both sides because the Angels have had one too many outfielders for probably 2 years now.
Yep.
The Phillies needed a center fielder for that same amount of time, and the Angels didn't have a catcher of the future, and Ohapi was blocked by JT Realmuto in Philadelphia. Like, this is one of those trades that just made sense for everyone, and I think it could open up a path for Brandon Marsh to take a step forward offensively, at least going into a more hitter-friendly environment, but also just working with some new coaches that might be able to get that strikeout rate down and possibly unlock some more of that power.
We just mentioned Odorizzi and Smith as a one-for-one that made a lot of sense, but that's dudes at, like, the veteran stage of their career. We don't see it a whole lot with a guy who just hit the majors in the last year or two and a pretty solid prospect, right? And I thought that trade was the young guy's equivalent of what we saw with the Astros and the Braves, because Marsh is a guy who I don't think we've seen the best he's gotten his bat. And I think anyone you ask around the game says, I think he's going to turn a corner at some point. And the Angels didn't necessarily have the time to give him. I guess they have the time. They have they had enough competition out there for at bats that it wasn't like a position was his where he can just have a long, long run. He has the defensive ability to make the Phillies immediately better out there. And I think what Ohapi does is fill a long-standing organizational need for the Angels. And if in the long run, if Marsh turns into a above average major leaguer in Philadelphia and Ohapi is their starting catcher for 5 years, fair, right? Yeah. I think that's what you're looking for in a trade like that. And it's almost just feels rare that a guy like Marsh has moved before a team has realized or truly figured out, taking the time to figure out if he is going to be what they thought he was.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. You don't get that many opportunities to upgrade your organization through a terrific hire. LinkedIn Jobs helps you to nail those chances. We've all searched for a job at some point in our lives, and chances are, if you're like me, you've used LinkedIn as a resource to network and follow the trends in your industry. You've spent a lot of time on LinkedIn, so why wouldn't you make that the place to post your job? LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to a perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. LinkedIn knows that small businesses are wearing so many hats and might not have the time or resources to hire. LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make that process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/MLB show. That's linkedin.com/MLB show to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
So the C group, I gave out a lot of C's. I think I treated this the way I took a psychology class my freshman year, and it was graded on a bell curve. So no matter how you performed, 10% of the class was going to get an A, 20% was going to get a B, 40% was going to get a C, 20% was going to get a D, and 10% was going to fail. And I thought that was ridiculously unfair back then. I still don't like it now.
What'd you get?
Oh, I took a D in that class. I had mono. I had mono my first semester of college. I missed like 3 weeks of psychology class. That was the wrong class to have first semester freshman year. If, see, I was the kind of 18-year-old that thought I didn't have to talk to the advisors. I thought I could figure everything out for myself. And I graduated in 4 years. Yay. But I think the advisors would have said, take the classes you know you're good at first. Start off on the right foot. Develop some confidence. Learn some good study habits before you get steamrolled by a class you're not prepared for.
I was just telling the story to my dad and my wife a little while ago. It was my first semester of college. I took a stats, 200 or whatever it was. People said it was a good class to have, basic, had to take it at some point, I think. And so I had gotten almost a 4.0 in high school, loved school, loved class, did was a good student. And I took that class and I felt like I'd just never seen math before. I loved math in high school. And it turns out it's not really math in the way that you're used to it. And I think I took a C in that class. It's the first time I've ever taken anything but an A or A minus. And now my wife is she's a data scientist. She like stats is her game. And then at work, I see what Eno does, and I'm like, if I would have just taken maybe like three more of those classes, I would understand baseball in a way that would make me like an N of one, like Eno is. I think N might be actually a stats thing. That's like part of why Eno is so good at what he does is a statsy stats look. And it's different from those of us who are just perusing Baseball Reference, trying to make sense of everything in front of us. So that's the class. If I could take it back and not get a C in it, that's the one.
Yeah, if I could retake that psychology class, maybe second semester sophomore year, I think I would at least bumped up to a C, and that still would have been one of my worst grades ever in school. Like, same kind of high school experience as you. It was shocking to do that poorly in a class. But yeah, if you're going to have 30% take a D or an F, I mean, that's just going to be tough. So the C group for me, I had the Rays, the Orioles, the Jays, the Red Sox, the Royals, the Angels. I think the Angels are more of a B team, the more I've thought about it. The Athletics, the Dodgers, the Giants, the Brewers, the Rangers, and the Diamondbacks. Diamondbacks are one of those teams that didn't really have much to do, so almost an incomplete there, so we don't have to really dig much into them. But of those teams that I mentioned, any direction you want to go in terms of someone you felt deserved either a higher grade or a lower grade because of what they did at this deadline?
I have to remember where you have some of these teams. Okay, the Mets, you had them as a D, right?
I had the Mets as a D.
I have the Mets as a C. Because they did address what C is for me is just like fine, like you did address things. They're probably like the on the cut line there between C and D, where it's almost like I want to give teams a little bit of credit for what they've done before the trade deadline, right? Mm-hmm. So, take the Rangers. Should we say you didn't do anything, or should we say, well, in the offseason you went and got Semien and Seager? So I almost want to give a little bit of credit that they're headed in the right direction. I don't actually remember where I put the Rangers. I have a D on them. But the Mets, it's like, well, you got such a good team going. Same with the Yankees. You put together such a good team. You didn't make the splash move. You didn't get the number one guy at those positions. Yankees got Benintendi and Montas. But the Mets went kind of even lower on the list. And so I do have them as a C. It's not like an excited C, but it's one that I feel like in the same way that the Braves small moves paid off last year, I feel like the Mets could be in that situation this year where the regulars are solid enough that maybe they didn't need to make huge moves.
Yeah, because you can look at the Mets, you say, well, they're a top three offense by WRC plus right now, and the only knock on them is they don't have enough home runs. Two of the three guys they brought in, Darren Ruff and Daniel Vogelback, bring a lot of their value hitting home runs. So to put those guys kind of on the fringes, yeah, like you now you've got guys that you can kind of spot in when you need a big swing, and you still have the consistency and the floor of that offense. So really like what the Mets have already in place. The reason I gave them a D, I felt like they had to upgrade at catcher and they didn't. And I think the Mets are just like, maybe this is a thing in being a teacher where you have this kid that should be an A student and isn't, and you push them harder and you expect more from them. Well, I expect a team like the Mets to act like a big market team, but I do think the moves they made actually make them better and do a pretty good job of fixing their flaws. And I know Michael Givens had a rough debut for them. They didn't really need to go out and get the best of the best bullpen arm. I know David Robertson going to Philly makes that bullpen a lot better. It would have been a nice luxury for the Mets to have. Had they done it, maybe they would have bumped up to a C for me. The rotation, having DeGrom and Scherzer healthy right now. Bassett's pitched well. Walker's pitched well. Carrasco's actually still healthy. Peterson's still healthy. They can get Tyler McGill back. it is easy to start to look at this team and say, what exactly were they supposed to upgrade? Other than catcher, I think they didn't leave as much on the table as some people might lead us to believe.
So one other team I want to ask you about is the Rays. I honestly, my first draft here, I dropped them in the D's. I just thought there's a lot of room for them to improve. And I know they're the Rays, so they're only going to pull certain types of moves. But to add, what was it? Essentially, David Peralta and Jose Siri, right? Mm-hmm. I think that was their moves. They didn't do nothing, but I don't think that meaningfully improved their team.
Yeah, I think Siri's a great defender in center field, and I think having lost Kevin Kiermaier Manuel Margot, maybe that was more of the priority because if they wanted to go offense in center field, or at least offensive potential, they have Josh Lowe in the organization, and I know there's a lot of swing and miss there, but he could be, I don't think he's a bad defender in center either. So they could have gone that route, but clearly Siri was someone they sought out. That was a three-team trade that brought him in. David Peralta, I think, is just a very solid player. It's a very Raysian sort of pickup. I think you can look at this group of relievers and say, like, are they as good in the bullpen as we're used to? A lot of times it's a no-name bullpen, guys that give you a lot of different looks. Yep. I would have liked to see them make a move like that where they picked someone's pocket and added to that bullpen. They didn't do that. So I think you've got a case to say that they're getting a D for this deadline because they could have been more active. I wonder how much the injury to Wander Franco has actually slowed down their interest in pushing more chips in for this season.
They've had a lot of injuries to hit them and not players you would consider impact players for most teams, but a Harold Ramirez has been injured. And he's kind of like their first baseman. The same with Yandy Diaz. Both players at like good contact hitters, not much for power, but they've made it work. And if they can put together a 1-9, now that Brandon Lau is back, Lau, whatever. I think you guys have this conversation every week. So
every single week, yeah.
So they've been hit hard with injuries. I understand they might feel a lot better at full strength coming up, but it felt like there was opportunity for them to pick someone's pocket, make a move that tells you, okay, we really are going to try to dance with the Blue Jays and with the Yankees, and it didn't feel like they did that for me. So I'm unimpressed. But another in the C group that we both have in the C group is the Oakland A's, and I think it's worth talking about them for a second because what they did at this deadline was adequate, I think, which is why they're squarely in the C section. If you were to look at all of what they've done over the last calendar year, I think you're going to talk about them more in the way that we're talking about, I guess, the Reds. But if we stack up what they did versus the Reds, and by that I just mean trading everybody, I do like where the Reds are at better than, and what they pulled out of all those trades more than what the A's did. I was curious to see if the A's could pull any of the Yankees' top prospects. They weren't able to for Frankie Montas, and maybe he just hasn't been quite good enough or quite healthy enough to be that caliber of pitcher, despite having, I think it's one more year under contract. So the A's are doing what they have set out to do for the long haul. But I was surprised they didn't move on from Laureano. And I guess they could have moved on from Murphy, but there must not just be that much of a market that, say, the Mets wanted to go get him. But didn't feel like the A's came away with quite the same haul that we're seeing from some of these other sellers over the last 6, 8, 12 months.
What do you think about Boston sort of playing the middle? I mean, Christian Vasquez being traded to Houston, but bringing back in Tommy Pham, ending up getting Eric Hosmer, who, because of the contract, I think constantly gets a lot of scrutiny.
Yep.
He's at least a useful player, maybe an upgrade just based on how much they've struggled to get offensive production out of first base and given the defensive problems that Franchi Cordero has had trying to play that position on the fly. And you start to look at that as a team that played the middle, and because of some injured players, Rafael Devers is back now, Trevor Story will be back soon, Chris Sale might get back later. If they can just hang around, they could still be a pretty dangerous playoff team because the roster at full strength is better than a lot of the other bubble teams. The problem for them has really been key injuries.
Yeah, I live up in the Boston area, and the vibe going into the week was they were ready to make some pretty significant moves, and as we got closer and closer, it just felt like, no, this is a franchise that's a little hesitant to rock the boat, and they've done it in the past, of course. They traded Mookie Betts and David Price, but this was a time where they wanted to make it clear pretty quickly that, okay, Xander Bogaerts is not going anywhere. We're going to hold on to him. They're going to do what they can, I suppose, to extend him, to extend Rafael Devers. But they had opportunities that they didn't take here. And we'd love to know what kind of offers they were getting for JD Martinez. Because what they come away with, if you net this out, is not real impressive. It's Christian Vasquez for two prospects of I think, little acclaim. You add Tommy Pham, which it looked like was getting ready for moving JD Martinez, but it wasn't. The Hosmer move, I think, is totally fine. Yeah, if you want to platoon him with Bobby Dalbec, great. I mean, you're basically having him for free. So go for it. He was going to go somewhere in this trade deadline, and people were talking about Miami maybe being a good fit, but Boston works for me. I think that's a nice landing spot for him. And they pick up the catcher, Reese McGuire, to sort of backfill for Vasquez. So I don't think they did much to improve themselves short or long term. And they also didn't really take all opportunities to trade and get better on the prospect front. So I had them in the D range as kind of a subpar, suboptimal deadline, but didn't harm themselves either by trading a Xander and taking a big swing, I guess.
Yeah, I kind of wondered what they could have got for Nathan Eovaldi if they traded him. I know the returns for players like JD Martinez tends to come out pretty light at the deadline, so you start to think about the combination of moves, maybe not doing that much long-term. Maybe that was part of why Chaim Bloom decided to stand pat and play the middle instead of selling off for the future. I thought there was a chance the Giants would be more aggressive sellers. I do like the trade that sent Darren Ruff to the Mets because they got back a younger version of Ruff in JD Davis. Davis has not been as productive as Ruff has been the way the Giants used him over the last few years. But I believe with the hitting instructors they have in place, some of the underlying numbers we've seen in JD Davis's profile, that could end up being a sneaky good trade for San Francisco. Where I think they fell a little short for me is I thought Carlos Rodon made all the sense in the world to trade. I thought you could also take a guy like Alex Cobb or Alex Wood and possibly trade those guys to teams looking for starters. And they didn't do it. I think part of the issue with Rodon, of course, is he has the opt-out at the end of the season. Yeah. If he were hurt, he would not opt out, and then you'd be on the hook for that money in the future. So maybe the conversations they had led to some underwhelming potential returns. What do you make of the Giants deadline? Were they right to mostly stand still?
I had them in the D category, and it's almost entirely because of Rodon, because they weren't able to navigate that opt-in. That was basically their entire issue here, was that teams are saying that's too much risk for us to take on, because if he's a rental, cool, great, well, we have a price we can agree on for a rental. But if he's a rental plus a potential injured all next season guy at full salary, then I don't want that. It's too much risk for me. And if he pitches well, he's gone. So I understand how you can sort of see how that equation doesn't really balance out, and they're not able to find a middle ground on that. But when you see how attractive and hot this starting pitching market was, the same reason I thought the Marlins were gonna trade Pablo Lopez was, boy, look what you can get back for this. And in the Marlins' case, they want to get some major league ready guys. The Giants could have probably gone a little more on the prospect side. But the difference is Lopez has a couple more years under contract, and Rodon probably doesn't, unless it's an injury year. So effectively does not have any more years under contract for how helpful he'll be to your roster. So the Marlins, I understood them sitting pat, standing pat, and keeping Lopez. I think they did fine. I think I had them in the C range, basically doing nothing, and except actually adding Groshans from the Blue Jays. I thought is a guy who was a lot more heralded a year ago, and if that's a guy you can turn around, well, they desperately need position player help, hitting help, lineup help, and they have the pitchers to do it, and they traded Zach Pop and Anthony Bass to do it. So Marlins did all right, and then back to the Giants. Really would have liked them to find a way to get Rodon, but they probably were hearing some really pretty creative offers for it because teams were so wary of that opt-out.
I think that had a lot to do with why he ultimately didn't get moved. And I don't know, maybe if you're the Giants, you say, well, we can't move Rodon for future value. So why would we get rid of other guys? Let's just hang around, see if we can make the playoffs and catch lightning in a bottle at the end of the season. So I guess that probably was why they ultimately decided to go down that path. The Brewers, I'm going to give them a C. I don't feel great about it. I think it's easy to be, it's easy to understand why if you're in the clubhouse, you're disappointed because you did get worse on paper. But I don't think they got much worse on paper. I mean, Josh Hader is better than Taylor Rogers, no doubt about that. The extra salt in the wound for Brewers fans was that Dinelson Lamette got DFA'd on Wednesday, and it looked like, oh, he's kind of part of this too. Like maybe we'll make Dinelson Lamette something.
Turn clearly, him around. Yeah,
that was clearly about just balancing out salaries. We know that the Padres were trying to keep things as tight as possible with all the other moves they were making, and if you look at Hader's salary versus Rogers and Lamette, you can quickly see that the Brewers might have been able to buy a second prospect in that deal because they got Esturi Ruiz and Robert Gosser. If they hadn't balanced out the money, maybe the trade doesn't happen at all, or they don't get both of those guys back, or they get two lesser players back. So they added to the bullpen with Matt Bush. They ended up making a small trade for Trevor Rosenthal. They're deeper in the bullpen, which they needed to be. They're a little bit worse at their apex, as I've described it. You know, the best case scenario is Hader over Rogers. They don't have that anymore, so they're a little worse in those circumstances. They're a little better in the long run, but you don't care about that as a first-place team, right? This is the peak definition of trying to thread the needle, trying to have your cake and eat it too, trying to win now and get better later. And I just don't know if that's the right move because of some of the, I guess, the soft science impact that it has on your club when you deal this way.
I didn't like the move when it went down. I understand why you do it, and it's more about Devin Williams maybe than it is about Josh Hader. You have the closer in the waiting, and he's going to be here for a while. Great. And they did make other moves, right? They added Rosenthal, they added Matt Bush, they added bullpen help, but as well as Rogers, of course. But I think evening out the talent in your bullpen doesn't do you all that much good. You still have to figure out roles and figure out all that. And the big complaint we've heard, you know, through Ken Rosenthal's reporting and all, is A, he's getting expensive and there's only one more year left on Hader before Hader hits free agency and he's going to make $16 million or something, which is a lot for a team like Milwaukee, I suppose. But the big complaint is that he only wants to pitch one inning at a time. And I understand that that's not ideal, but I think we can live with it for at least this playoff run, right? Mm-hmm. And if you want to have that conversation in the offseason, give you some more time to make moves to make up for losing a Josh Hader, that's fine, I think. But in the playoffs, I'm okay with Josh Hader just pitching one inning if that's what we need to do, or maybe we revisit that conversation with him come October. But to me, that being the driving force behind it, not really, I don't know, not really a justified reason to make this big of a move at this point in the season with a first place team.
Did the Blue Jays miss an opportunity, or are they the kind of team that had enough quality all over, similar to a team like the Mets, where you can't look at them and say they failed? I mean, they could have made their worst spot stronger. The Whit Merrifield trade was just surprising because of, previously at least, Whit Merrifield's unvaccinated status kept him from being able to play in Toronto, and it doesn't sound like they are able to work that out prior to making this trade, which is another strange twist. But they're such a well-constructed team. Adding bullpen depth seems appropriate.
Yeah, same camp maybe as the Mets, were almost like the C-D cut line of they addressed their needs but didn't do it in a way that moves the needle much. I think Whit Merrifield a couple years ago, yeah, that moves the needle. Maybe they can use him strategically to really impact this lineup because they already have a little bit of everything in that lineup. And if you get a guy with that kind of plus speed, great. Maybe he can change some things. But they didn't make the significant move that maybe I would anticipate them doing. And maybe that's one of the broader stories from this trade deadline is we waited for the Dodgers to do something and waited for the Giants to make not a buying move, but trade Rodon and get some big package back. We waited for the Yankees to do something at the last minute, and the move they made was not the one we expected. And they got their work done a little bit ahead of time with Benintendi and with Montas. But the Blue Jays were one that I thought there was a move in the bag somewhere, and there just wasn't. And think of, you know, what if that's the team that goes out and gets Josh Hader? You know, how does that change things? Jordan Romano and Josh Hader at the end of the bullpen, if they're willing to be deployed kind of effectively, not just the ninth inning save role in the playoffs, I mean, that's devastating. And when you have a rotation that has some question marks in the way that Berríos has performed. Kikuchi, of course, has had a really rough season. If you only want guys going five innings a pop in the postseason, the better your bullpen can be, the deeper it is, the more versatile it can be. That's great, because I think their lineup's fine. They're going to be one of the best lineups in baseball, regardless. And so if I were going to make an extra move for them, it probably would have been a higher impact reliever, although Bass and Pop are not nothing.
Yeah, sometimes the 6th, 7th inning guys too end up being a little underrated at the time of the trade, and you see later, we just haven't seen this guy pitch a lot because they're, a team like Miami maybe isn't on your high on your viewing priority list if you are watching the entire league. It's understandable given the state of that team. And I had the Marlins in the D group, and I don't even know if that's necessarily right, because they didn't have to do anything, right? If you have controllable pitching and you like the offers you get, great, you can move it. If you don't, just wait, because everyone needs pitching later. So as long as you keep those guys healthy, you're going to be fine. And I think that's the caveat that makes me think that maybe they missed the opportunity on Pablo Lopez, only because of his injury history, not because of his skills.
Yeah,
I would say the window might have been kind of wide open right now to move him. Now you run the risk of another arm injury, possibly putting him in a spot where teams are less interested if you want to try and trade him this winter. There's still going to be demand for these Marlins pitchers 3 months from now. So if you can't get a good deal, and you're in Kim Eng's position, you don't have to make a trade just for the sake of making a trade. But I really thought Lopez was going to move. I didn't think it was just going to be a couple of bullpen arms.
Yeah, the problem with what they have going on is their rotation has such upside, and I think they're real hesitant, just like most teams would be, from trading from a position of strength when that's starting pitching, because it's so valued. And hey, what if two guys go down? You need someone gets Tommy John. He's out for a whole 18 months. You're going to need all those arms. So I understand wanting to keep guys while they're homegrown, while they're relatively affordable. But look at your lineup. You have a lot of needs. A lot of needs there. And you're not a team that's going to spend in free agency to fill all those. And so you're getting the JJ Bleday's coming up. You're getting some of those younger options, but they don't have enough in the farm as far as position players go to make this team, this lineup that much better this year and next year. So you're going to have to do that in some way, whether that's trade or free agency. And if I'm looking at this team, they're going to do it by a trade. And so this looked like an opportunity to get quite a lot for Pablo Lopez, who... Yeah, injury risk is a real thing with him. What happens if he goes down in September or ends the season, has a IL stint or something along the way? Is he really going to bring you any more in the offseason? I'm not sure that that's true. So I thought they were going to make the trade, and turns out they decided it just wasn't worth it at this point.
I think we're in a really fun stretch for the Marlins between now and opening day, in that we're really going to see what Kim Eng wants to do with this roster, because Gary Denbo's gone, Derek Jeter's gone, and I just think it's clearer than ever. This is her window to do as she sees fit, and I don't know. I think any front office, I think sometimes we give GMs more credit and more blame than they deserve. There's more of a group effort around the league in these transactions, in these decision-making processes, but I just want to see how this roster might change between now and opening day, because I think we could see more change than usual from the Marlins. I think I had the Cardinals initially in the D group, and the more I've thought about that Jordan Montgomery trade, I think they sort of salvaged their deadline in a pretty big way, because he's good. And getting out of Yankee Stadium, I think people are going to realize there's a chance he's a top 40 starting pitcher league-wide. He could end up being the best starter the Cardinals have sooner rather than later, which maybe that speaks to a bigger problem in St. Louis, and maybe that's part of the reason why I initially gave him a D, because I thought Jordan Montgomery, good addition, but maybe you needed to get one more. Even after getting Jose Quintana, maybe you needed to still be the team that went to Miami and made the move now for Pablo Lopez. I thought that was a fantastic fit for St. Louis, and it just didn't happen.
Yeah, I had them in my C group as well. The Montgomery trade makes me feel quite a bit better, where if you were to rewind a week and let's say you forget about Soto and say, what do you want the Cardinals to do? And you look at what they came out with, you said, that's fine. That they got a little bit of starting pitching help in Quintana, in Montgomery. They did all right. They're going to be pretty well set up to challenge the Brewers here in the Central. And that is probably the safer way to play things rather than going for the Soto, going for the Hail Mary. If your expectation was Soto, then I understand being quite disappointed with this trade deadline. But I think they did all right, and they took from a surplus of outfielders and a guy who had so many question marks about his bat and Harrison Bader and turned him into Jordan Montgomery. I think that's a good trade for them, and there's a reason they were targeting starting pitching, because they've had such troubles filling out that rotation, keeping guys healthy. And hey, let's look at the future. Wainwright, I don't think he's announced his intentions for the future, but he's not getting any younger. So if he's not here next year, you know, you've got a Montgomery there to take his place.
I had six teams taking an F, all for varying reasons, but I had the Guardians, the White Sox, the Tigers, the Cubs, the Pirates, and the Rockies is all getting an F. And honestly, the Rockies, they're in a class of their own. If there was a lower grade to give a team, didn't show up to class. You didn't even fail. You didn't attend. You didn't even realize that you could make moves. I mean, their lack of activity, and then, you know, good for Daniel Bard getting a 2-year extension. That's great for him. But it's known something's just wrong in Colorado. As far as the Guardians go, why didn't this team do something to get better? They got prospects for days. They could do anything they want on the trade front. I know they don't want to spend money in that ownership group, but my goodness, this is a surprisingly disappointing deadline for a team that honestly could have been players for anybody that was out there.
I only had three Fs, and the rest were Ds that you just mentioned, but it was the Guardians, White Sox, and Rockies. No question to me. The Guardians and White Sox, you're in a gettable division, in a division where the Twins are ahead, but not comfortably, and they actually went out and did stuff. They actually went out and got some needs addressed and some potential impact players for this year and next year. And meanwhile, the Guardians and White Sox are just sitting on their hands. The White Sox, hey, I understand you've had a lot of injuries, things haven't broken your way, but you have prospect capital, you have the financial resources to go get more, and they didn't. They did absolutely nothing except Reese McGuire for Jake Diekman, right? I think that's their only move. Mm-hmm. And the Guardians sitting on their hands doesn't make sense for me either, because, look, I understand you locked up Jose Ramirez long-term, and that's great, but that can't be the only thing you do this year. And you've had a better-than-expected year so far. I understand that the focus of the franchise may be elsewhere on the development and maybe not expecting this year to be the year, but look, these starting pitchers that you have aren't getting any younger. To borrow that term once more, you haven't traded them. You haven't signed any more extensions. It just seems like they're a little bit directionless at a time when the roster is telling them, "Hey, look, you can believe in us a little bit. We can give this a real go." I'm just pleading with you, don't waste more of Ramirez's prime here with not knowing exactly what direction you're going to take this, because there were ample opportunities for them to upgrade here, and they didn't take really any of them except for a Sandy Leon trade, I think was the extent of what they did. So doesn't make sense to me. I understand that the offseason is there too, and you might not expect that this is your time to go for it. Asking price is too high. The cost to improve, not really worth the dollar amount you're giving up in value. But, you know, you gotta take some chances at some point here. And this seemed to be a team that was giving you some reasons to believe in them.
Did the Pirates really miss an opportunity here? Because I look up and down the roster, and unless you were going to make the move and trade David Bednar, who's hurt right now, and give up multiple years of control and get a nice return back there, or make the Brian Reynolds trade, which you don't have to make right now, I don't know who else on that roster is actually appealing to contending teams. I don't think they had much to move. Ben Gamel maybe is a fourth or fifth outfielder on a contender, probably doesn't bring back much for your organization. So I put them in the F group, but they should really be an incomplete, because I don't think they had much to do. You could say they get a C because they didn't do anything dumb.
That's the state of their rebuild, right? It's a point where you have young players where if you would like to make that big long-term decision move, then yeah, you move Brian Reynolds. You could have done that last year. You could have done that year before. All depending on when you see your window opening, or if you plan, you think you're having substantive talks about extensions or something like that, right? Where you think he's going to be here into the back half of this decade. They clearly have decided they're not really interested in shopping Brian Reynolds. They've made that clear the last couple of opportunities they've had in the offseason and trade deadline. So I get it. If that's the way you're going to play this, then great. He's part of your future with Ke'Bryan Hayes, with O'Neal Cruz, with, you know, all these other guys they have coming up at this point. But they're quite a ways off still. And that's evidenced by the fact that you don't have many guys to trade at the deadline. It was Quintana. It was Chris Stratton. It was Ben Gamel. And that was the guys they tried to trade. And Ben Gamel, there just wasn't enough of an offer for them to be worth it. It's reminds me of a couple of years ago, they had Corey Dickerson, who had been injured a little bit, been kind of effective, pretty good actually for them, and they ended up trading him for a player to be named later, and the player was never named later, and they just got salary paid for. So it's one of those situations. You probably could have got someone to take Ben Gamel. You wouldn't got anything terribly valuable for him. So they didn't. And David Bednar being injured is one thing. He's also from Pittsburgh. I would not be surprised to see him sign an extension with them, just because he's a local guy who's found a nice role there. So Pirates, I gave him a D, but you're right. There wasn't a whole lot they could have done, barring a Brian Reynolds trade, which I think they've decided they don't want to do.
Cubs probably deserve a little more than an F because they did trade some relievers, and I think they got some interesting players back. Hayden Wesneski comes back into the organization, a possible starter for them. They need more starting pitching, so I think that's fine. I think the reason many people are frustrated with them is that we were sure that Wilson Contreras was on the move.
Not only us, Wilson Contreras was sure he was on the move.
He went through all of the rituals, got all the hugs in, was totally prepared, and then no, two more months in Chicago, maybe more. Obviously, they can give him the qualifying offer and get a draft pick if he leaves. They could extend him. I actually don't think it's a bad idea if they extend Wilson Contreras. You do need some players there. They're not going into deep, deep rebuild mode. Their offseason was pretty weird when you think about it. They were the team that got Seiya Suzuki. They went in and got Marcus Stroman in free agency and added a bunch of short-term relievers to try and play the middle this year, and it didn't work out. And I just kind of think they still lack identity, and I feel like if they let Wilson Contreras go in free agency, they're going to lack it even more for the foreseeable future.
I'm not sure what the right way to play this was, but I know they didn't do it. I know it's not the right way to do it, to have these two guys, one who's not even a rental, giving their farewells to the home ballpark, the home crowd, the teammates, and then to have nothing happen. Listen, you didn't need a trade happen. You probably could have messaged that earlier to him that, look, doesn't seem like anything's happening. You don't need to tip your cap to the crowd. Like, don't need to say all your goodbyes. We'll let you know if something happens. And then with Contreras, I mean, that's the F of this, is I think you needed to get something back for him better than a draft pick. If they have designs on extending him, makes sense to me. I would be kind of surprised if he'd be willing to have that conversation now. Whether that's because of what happened at this deadline, if that relationship is harmed at all by the confusion, by the lack of communication that happened there, or if just he wants to see what the market looks like, and if a plus hitting catcher hits the market, even if he has some defensive game calling deficiencies, he's going to get paid well somewhere. And I don't know if the Cubs want to do it, but they are kind of at least look like they're on the upswing of that rebuild, the quick kind of turnaround rebuild they're doing. So yeah, grabbing that catcher as kind of establishing him as the franchise cornerstone for this next core makes a lot of sense to me. So that could work out, because he's gonna be kind of hindered in free agency with this qualifying offer.
One more team to get to from this F group, the Tigers. And again, I don't think they had to go out and make the big move and trade Tarek Skubal right now. They can certainly find a market for him this offseason if they're willing to trade him. When you do the big rebuild and a lot of the prospects are either early draft picks you spent on star pitchers coming out of college, or you find someone like Skubal a little bit later coming off an injury and get that player to the big leagues and make him a very good starter, it's just risky if you don't have the position player core to go along with it. And that's been the knock on the Tigers. Riley Green's fantastic, by the way. I think if he'd been on the opening day roster, people would have a greater appreciation already developed for him as part of their core. I get it in the sense that if you don't get the offer you want for Skubal, you do nothing. But this is a team that probably should have moved some bullpen arms. Yep. Between Gregory Soto, who's got several years of control left, that could have been a big trade piece for them. Joe Jimenez, who I believe is under control for one more year, and Andrew Chafin, who signed a two-year contract when he signed as a free agent. I'm surprised all three of those guys are still there in Detroit.
Yeah, like we were saying with the Pirates, there isn't much to trade there as far as younger impact players that will give you a big return. But they have bullpen help there. They don't have a rotation to speak of. It's been pretty decimated by injury. And Tarik Skubal, despite the Ken Rosenthal's report that they're willing to hear offers on Tarik Skubal and, quote, everyone else, apparently they didn't have enough of those conversations, because those bullpen arms could help, I think, around the league. And Fulmer, they were able to kind of get him back on his feet after years of injury. But yeah, to not take advantage of the rest of the arms they had in the bullpen and find a prospect or two for them really surprised me. And not sure what the intent was there, but Andrew Chafin, wasn't he brought in to be flipped at the deadline? I mean, it seemed like the easiest move to make there, and he performed well. They just didn't find that opportunity. So not sure what they're trying to do there. These are not qualifying offer caliber players, so that's not the reason. But I'm not quite sure what's going on in Detroit at this point. They're toward the back end of a rebuild, but these are the small moves you make to help sustain you as you finally get back toward a contending day.
And unfortunately, I think there's going to be a lot of changes in that front office coming up in the near future. It just seems like it has not gone as planned. Injuries are a part of it, but that's certainly not the only part of it for the Tigers. And I would agree with you, not a lot of position players, especially, that you could move to other teams right now. Even Jonathan Scope had another year on his contract. He's been the worst qualified offensive player in the league to this point in the season. A contending team doesn't want a player like that for the bench. So Robbie Grossman moved on, and that was pretty much it for the Tigers at this deadline. Even
another guy to throw out there is Jamer Candelario. Felt like he was coming off a pretty nice year last year. This is a guy who's 28, 29 years old, I think, and has just not been the same player this year. They haven't been able to keep producing these guys, and even when they bring in Javi Baez, he's been pretty brutal this year. A little better numbers of late, but it's a rough go there until you get Miguel Cabrera's numbers off the books, his contract off the books. Probably don't have a whole lot of wiggle room there with the current ownership.
I'm with you there. So, Steven, I think we set a record for the Friday episode of the Athletic Baseball Show. I think this is the longest episode of the year.
Let's
it's right
go.
Up there with the season preview I did with Nick Pollock on opening day. So we're either first or second, at least as far as the Friday episodes go. Thanks again for stepping in for Keith.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Give Steven a follow on Twitter at Steven J. Nesbitt. That's Steven with a PH, by the way. So give him a follow. Follow all his work on The Athletic. Check out theathletic.com/baseball show if you'd like to get a subscription for $1 a month for the first 6 months. For Steven Nesbitt, I'm Derek Van Riper. The Athletic Baseball Show returns on Monday. Have a great weekend.